Hello, I'm Liz Jones. If you read my diary in the Mail on Sundays You magazine, then you'll know me and my life pretty well. But if you've always wanted to know more, this is the place for you. Welcome to Liz Jones's Diary, the podcast. I'll be taking you behind the scenes of this week's column before digging back into the archives to find some of the most shocking and hilarious stories from the last 20 years. I'll be doing all this with the help of my assistant, friend and confidant, Nick.
Hello.
Love her too. I love her.
Oh my god, it's so miserable.
She gives me everything and tenderly.
The kiss my it's awful. It's awful. Awful. To me.
I love her.
It is so miserable and depressing.
Who can possibly do a podcast with someone who doesn't appreciate the Beatles?
Oh, come on. I love her. It's so depressing.
Tenderly. It's sweet.
It's miserable.
Better than Ed Sheeran, Ginger Nut.
Get out of here. Get out. No, no.
Nicola and I have nothing in common. Nothing.
I think about three podcasts ago we found a man we both fancied, didn't we?
Who was that? Was it Morton Harkett?
No, definitely wasn't Morton. Who was it?
Tom Hardy.
So we've got something we can call.
Now the reason I'm paying Beatles music from Swinging London, the Swinging 60s.
Torture me?
No, it's because very sadly, Dame Mary Quant died on the day we're recording this. 93.
You're torturing her instead.
93.
She did well, 93, bless her.
Well, You magazine wanted me to interview her in 2012 when her autobiography came out. And we had it all the day in the diary. I was ready. I had my hot pants. I had my green nail varnish.
Did you wear Mary Quant moss to interview Mary Quant?
But she was too ill to meet me, but she hung on for another 11 years.
Maybe it was just an excuse.
But I got my mum to make me a pair of brown corduroy hot pants with little braces.
Oh, my God. You're there.
And I used to wear Blush Baby and Toffee to give me contours because my face is like a spoon. And I had green nail polish in the little round bottle with the flower on the front called Moss. I'm very sad today that she's died because I'm thinking that if she's 93, I might possibly have another 30 years of podcasts to do.
You might do. It's something to look forward to, isn't it? 30 years of podcasts with me.
But it's like, it's all wrapped up in my childhood and my sisters and the Beatles and Carnaby Street. And you can't appreciate now how new she was at the time. She was absolutely revolutionary that women stopped dressing like their mothers and it was something completely new with white tights. I begged my mum to take me on the bus to Chelmsford to Bonds, which then became Debenhams, but it was Bonds, and she bought me a pair of white lacy tights.
Oh.
I had to have white lacy tights and a brass sort of metallic chain belt. She was so revolutionary. Although when I interviewed Barbara Hilanicki, who came up with Bieber, Bieber was much more, even though Mary Quant was a shop girl and she married into aristocracy, Bieber was much more working class girl without much money. Mary Quant was actually quite expensive.
Yeah.
So I didn't actually own any Mary Quant clothes. My mum had to make them on her Singer sewing machine.
Oh, you're a lovely mum.
But I did have the makeup and the nail polish and the blush baby.
I think that's the thing, isn't it, with these designers? At least if they bring out things like makeup and stuff, you can still get a little bit of that designer.
Yes, yeah, see, I've got my Victoria Beckham eye pencil.
You have?
Which is very good, actually.
Is it?
Yes.
Did it hurt you to say that? After being banned from her shows, did it hurt you?
Her makeup, Victoria Beckham's makeup, is actually not that expensive. It arrives beautifully packaged. It's really, really, really good.
I didn't
good.
Even know she did makeup.
Well, there you are, you see.
I didn't know that. I've learned something today.
We've got nothing in common.
Nothing,
you
nothing,
just go
nothing.
To Boots.
Yeah. I do.
Anyway, so I couldn't interview her when her autobiography came out, but I did write a piece for You magazine about the book. And I thought it just showed you the innocence of the time. So she had this business called Bazaar on the King's Road. And she used to buy all the fabric from Harrods.
Oh.
And like she just ran up an account with Harrods and they just put it on her tick, didn't ask her to pay it. So Harrods funded her business by just letting her buy all this fabric. They didn't ask her to pay for it. But you look at it now when you go to a shop, they take your card. Do you want a Harrods award card? No, thank you. They take your money before they give you
anything.
The product. And
anything.
Like when I stayed in a hotel, I'd already paid for the room. I only had two fizzy waters, but they took £200 off my card, which I can't afford in case I stole a pillow or something. What am I going to do? Stuff it up my jumper and say that I'm pregnant?
This thing about paying first. I went to for a meal with my mum the other day, and you pay first. What happens if your meal's horrible? What happens,
what
if,
happens
there's a
if
hair
you start
in it?
Vomiting?
Yeah, what happens if there's a hair in your meal? What happens if you wait 2 hours for it? You've got no recourse whatsoever because you walk through the door and the minute you decide what you want, you have to pay
but
for it.
But even in a Costa coffee, you pay for your coffee, then you queue up to get it.
Yeah, sick of it. Sick of it. Because it means the consumer has no recourse if something goes wrong. You've got nothing, nothing, nothing.
No, but Mary Quant was able to fund her business by just running up all these bills at Harrods, like an account.
Yeah.
You can't get accounts with it. I've tried.
You can't get
accounts
anywhere
now. I've tried with my local deli
now.
To get an account. You can't do it.
No.
But I love the fact that Harrods used to just let her take stuff out the shop without paying for it. And didn't hassle her either.
Well, they made a good, they sort of made a good call, didn't they, really? Because she went on to be super successful.
Yes, but so would people with me.
Yes.
Letting me have stuff.
I don't know if the deli with boxes of champagne is quite the same as Mary Quant with material for
yeah, but it's good for his. It's good for his profile. But even though I couldn't meet her because she was so ill in 2012, I did go to the Mary Quant exhibition at the V&A in 2019. And I went round with the curator who was talking me through it. And every time we got to a big exhibition space, I go, oh my God. And what was so lovely about the exhibition was they asked normal women to tell us about their Mary Quant clothes and to lend them to the... So you got these little outfits and you got the story of who owned it and how much they paid for it and what they wore it at their wedding and what it meant to them. So it was really personal and intimate. It was a fantastic exhibition. So this is my archive, award winning probably.
Of course. Would it be anything but?
Of Mary Quant at the V&A 2019. While Dior at the V&A has drawn crowds and accolades, I gave Dior 5 out of 5 stars.
I like Dior.
The Mary Quant retrospective in the gallery next door is the first to make me shed actual tears.
Oh my good grief.
Even though I spent the 60s and 70s in Essex, this wonderfully detailed display makes me realise my formative years were entirely shaped by Mary Quant. Every cabinet holds a memory. My mum taking me to choose paisley needle cord to make a Quant zip tunic. My older sister, Lynn, who got a job in Dickens and Jones just off Carnaby Street. She returned one day with a Mary Quant berry to replace the customer's brownies one I'd been forced to wear till then. My sister Lynn wanted to be part of Swinging London, so she got a job in the knitting department of Dickens and Jones, and she didn't meet a single star.
I'm not sure the knitting department...
None of them wanted to knit.
No, it's not the place really, is it?
Mary Quant is most famous for popularising the miniskirt. There is a graph played out by mannequin climbing from the on the knee in 1962 to the mid-thigh sweater dress worn by Twiggy in 1966. But Mary Quant gave us so much more. She liberated us not just by taking women out of their mother's clothes, but by using new technology and new fabrics like Lycra and crimpling with their welcome bit of give. Sports bras, she named them booby traps. Tracksuits, loungewear and tights. The reason tights were invented was because of the miniskirt. You didn't want someone seeing the gap, the suspenders.
Yeah.
That's why tights were invented.
Ah. Makes sense now.
As well as opening the first bazaar boutique on the King's Road in 1955, where a wool suit was typically 24 guineas, £528 today. They were quite expensive. Within a decade, she'd introduced diffusion lines. That was the first. Ginger, with clothes at half the price, all made in Britain. Nothing now is made in Britain. Nothing, 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 nothing. Best of all, Mary Quant allowed her designs to be reproduced in dressmaking and knitwear patterns. That's when my mum comes into this piece of history.
I love your mum.
She has the pattern.
Now, I love the thought of your mum sitting there making her little Mary Quant stuff. I just love that.
I said to my mum, it's got to be psychedelic. It's got to be psychedelic, mum. Interestingly, you can, if you've got a sewing machine, download a pattern from the V&A website to recreate the Georgie dress from 1962. Brilliant. Brilliant the V&A does patterns. Amazing. What else brings back memories? Hot pants. Mine, brown needle cord, pinafores. I had a lot of pinafores.
Very sexy, Jones.
She came up with the wet collection, which makes me laugh out loud at the memory of all the girls in my high school triple rolling the waistbands of our skirts to make them shorter, developing a crush on PVC. I saved up for a chocolate trench coat that, looking back, was more Gestapo than gamine. Post Me Too, is the mini tarnished? Was it freeing, or did it herald the moment men could have sex without marriage? Now, at this exhibition, gazing at Twiggy's peak mini, there is no longer the shock of the knee. It doesn't even seem that short. Twigs doesn't even seem that thin. Today's expectation for us to look like jolly birds into our dotage is far more sexist than anything dreamed up by Mary Quant. By the early 70s, as feminism and the maxi took hold, I had green velvet maxi. Green velvet. Hordes defected to Laura Ashley. That's where I got the green velvet maxi. Pie crust.
Okay, yeah, Laura Ashley's not definitely not my thing.
Quant wound things down in 1975, which is where the exhibition ends. My biggest gasp at this show, the cabinet containing the cosmetics with the distinctive daisy packaging. Quant was a genius at marketing. She came up with a daisy. You didn't have to read the word. It was just the daisy, and you knew that was her.
Even I actually know about that.
Bulbous little bottles of nail polish. I wore moss to school and was told off by the hockey mistress, who said I turned her green around the gills for having such bad taste. And blush, baby, I spent a decade with toppy stripes on my face. When the V&A started to put this collection together, it used social media to ask women for their Mary memories, photos, garments, stories. 1,000 responded. And 35 of the garments on show here come from that, with a carousel of photographs and anecdotes. Antidotes.
Antidotes, get it right.
Every stitch is enmeshed with the echo of weddings, honeymoons, holidays, first pay packets. Don't expect the story of couture as worn by movie stars and royalty. This is a story of ordinary women who were invited to join the Fatten Party. And boy, did we enjoy it. Then I chose my list of five things to say.
Okay.
Jill Kennington, very famous. You've probably never heard of her because you're a fetus.
Never.
In a white PVC raincoat from the Wet Collection. Twiggy in a jersey sweater dress, peak mini. Celia Hammond, my friend.
Lovely Celia.
Lovely Celia. Models a waistcoat and tie dress, 1962. Tights and makeup featuring the iconic Daisy logo. Hot pants, 1971. On loan from a shopper called Brenda. The garment became so loved it was passed down the family. Oh, there was a photo to go with this. Should we tweet the photo when we do the podcast?
Yeah.
It's me in a 1969 Daisy Mini made by my mum using Mary Quant Butterick pattern, crimpling from Bond's haberdashery department. I'm part of fashion history.
I can't wait
me
to see that.
Me and my mum and her sewing machine.
I cannot wait to see that. Your mum was very good like that, though, wasn't she? Like sewing stuff and making clothes and...
She made all our clothes. We didn't buy clothes.
Oh, that's really... I mean, consider how many of you were.
This is like Monty Python, isn't it? I grew up in all in Tuck Road. The other big news this week, apart from Mary Quant dying...
Yes.
...is Meghan isn't coming to the coronation.
You're so disappointed, aren't you?
Well... I could earn several thousand pounds if Meghan comes to the coronation.
What's she wearing? Where's it
What's she doing? What's she wearing? What's her shoes? What's her hair doing?
What's her and Kate doing to each other?
Body language.
Oh, God.
Lip reading. You see, because I'm deaf, I know what she's saying.
That's a lot of work down the drain, isn't
it? A lot of work down the drain. Come on, Meghan. Your child is four. The other one doesn't even know where it is. Just bring them. Nick will babysit.
Will she? Aye.
Go to the coronation. We all want some succession type drama of Shiv and Rome.
I do think, though, to be fair, if your husband's father is being crowned king, you pretty much should turn up. It's pretty significant, isn't it? You know,
but
if you
want
to build bridges.
To turn up. I want to go. I haven't been asked.
Well, if you want to build bridges as well, show a bit of interest in the fact that he's going to be king. You know, just show a little
but
bit of...
What's the point of marrying into the royal family if you don't want to be there at those key moments?
No, well, that's history, isn't it? It is history.
But she could dine out on it forever. So come on, Meghan. Keep me in Lily's kitchen dog food. Come to the coronation. Nick will babysit. What's your problem?
What's their problem? What
Come
is
on,
it?
Megs. I don't think anyone's very excited about the coronation.
No, I don't. There was we get the PR emails, and it was saying about the percentage of people that were saying they were going to watch it, and it was very, very low.
But not many people are having street parties.
No,
I think we're street partied out from the Jubilee, aren't we?
No, where my mum lives, they're having a street party
for the coronation.
Yeah, they are, because they had such a good one for the Jubilee. It was so successful. They're having a coronation street party. But I don't think there's the same enthusiasm as there was for his mum. I just don't.
But if Meghan came, we'd all watch.
Yeah, of course we would.
Put her on the balcony. Put her on the balcony in Dior. We'd all be watching.
God.
And Kirsty.
Kirsty?
Kirsty.
Who's Kirsty?
Kirsty.
Who's Kirsty? Keep saying...
It's going to be doing the commentary instead of David Dimbleby. Kirsty.
But who's Kirsty?
Well, she's married to the man who owns Soho House, who I had a war with.
Ah, okie dokie.
So I'm not going to watch it, am I?
Arch enemy. Well, you are going to watch it. Of course you're going to.
Only if Meghan comes.
No. See, I can't. I'm going to watch it because it's history. Not because I particularly like Charles or... No, just it's history, and I'm just wondering. Sort of,
I think Charles is a bit difficult, actually. Any man who takes their bed with them on holiday, He takes his bed with him.
Yeah. See, Camilla,
that's a bit annoying
normal,
at Heathrow, isn't it? You're parking your car at Heathrow. The man says, make a note of where you park your car because he can't be bothered to, and I brought my bed. Yeah. It's a bit annoying, isn't it?
But Camilla seems quite down to earth, doesn't she? I mean, I know she's not popular with a lot of people because of history, but she seems to be doing a good job. She seems very down to earth, unlike him. I think she keeps him probably quite on his toes.
Yeah, I don't mind Camilla apart from the fact that she hunts.
Yeah, we don't like that at all. I do think the royal family really do need to kind of get a grip about that and sort of, you know, you can't be a patron of a welfare society, an animal welfare, and still go hunting. You just can't do it. It just isn't on. They need to stop it. Stop it now.
She needs to start knitting or making Mary Quant patterns.
Yes, follow your mum's footsteps.
Someone else died, didn't they, Nick?
They did. Well, we know that Paul O'Grady died last week, which was awful. But I watched the show about him this week, For the Love of Paul Grady. Did you see that?
No.
It was really good. You could see it was sort of cobbled together very quickly. And, you know, you could see there was sort of like they grabbed all these bits of footage and got these people together. But it was so heartfelt. It was so genuine. In that sort of cobbledy, thrown together way, it was so genuine, and
it's a bit like the way we do the podcast, isn't it?
Much like the way we do the podcast, but you could see he was like really, really loved, and I really enjoyed it because I remember Lily Savage from when I was a kid, and I'd sort of forgotten all the things that I'd watched as a kid, and it was a really nice reminder.
Lily Savage,
and how clever he was. I mean, you know, he was sort of talking. He in a show, and Robbie Williams was there, and he was saying, "Oh, Robbie, you're so edible. Have you considered an older women have some stewing steak instead of flash dry?" And it was hilarious. It was just hilarious, and I had such a lot of respect for him because he took a drag act into the clubs and then into the main media, which no one else had done. He ended up doing Blankety Blank, doing, you know, sort of his own talk show, breakfast TV. He did so much. And I thought, full respect for that, because you've actually taken a drag act and you've made it media, mainstream media.
You see, I have a bit of a thing about men dressing up as women. I think it's the same as a white person wearing blackface and being a minstrel. And it's making fun of women and caricaturing them. But I think Paul O'Grady was different because his was done about a female relative and with affection and knowledge. And it was done with affection. It wasn't done as a caricature. And I think that's the difference.
No, I think he was very clever. And, you know, remembering that he did it through the AIDS pandemic. So, you know, there was such a lot of hostility towards and such gay people and homophobia and a lot of sort of recrimination and saying, you know, they were spreading out all this rubbish that was going on. And he was putting out this really sort of positive, and everyone loved him. Grannies loved him. Everybody loved him. So I had a lot of respect for him. So I really enjoyed that aspect of the show. And I just felt, and I saw the thing where he did with Barbara Windsor, Cilla Black and him at the Palladium for the Queen, doing a show, and they were just fantastic, and it just reminds me of how talented these people were, you know. And I don't think we've got that. I don't think we've got that showmanship.
You've got my singing.
Yeah, I don't think we've got that now. I don't think we've got
singing.
Yeah, I'm ignoring that, the showmanship. And I think he pulled out of Lily Savage and reinvented himself just at the right time before it got silly, you know, before it just went on and on and on. And I sort of really enjoyed seeing his story. And I think what it made me think about was his legacy. He was obviously, like, so loved, and he did so much with his life. I mean, he's died young, and that's tragic. But he was a social worker. He took drag into the mainstream media. He was incredibly talented. He was incredibly forthright, you know, on people's behalf to try and sort of raise issues and call politicians.
So who are Battersea going to have instead of him then?
I don't know. A friend of mine actually works for Battersea, and they're everyone's so upset. Everybody is. She's been telling me everybody have got all these wonderful stories about him, and how genuine he was. So when they stopped filming, you know, and he stopped filming with the dogs and stuff. If there was a dog that wouldn't eat, he'd be laying on the floor with it for hours trying to coax it to eat. Or he genuinely really, really spent time with these dogs off of the camera. It wasn't just an on-camera thing. And they're going to do, apparently Battersea in talks about they're going to do something for him. But I don't sort of like use the words "it's not fair" very often. I sort of avoid that. I just think it's so not fair, really, when someone is so nice and does so much and they die so young. I really felt, I was quite tearful watching this, actually. And I just felt, you know, it's not bloody fair. And I never say that. I never say those words. And what a legacy that when you die, you're really, really loved like that. And I just, it really touched me. And I thought we should talk about it on the podcast because we're dog lovers and he did so much for animals. And I just thought it was right that we should just talk about him and bring it up and honour him and say, you know, what an amazing legacy he's left.
Still got Paul McCartney, though.
Oh, dear God.
I give you all my love.
Oh. Even Lily Savage was a better singer.
You can read this week's diary in full in Mail on Sunday's You magazine.
Talking of singing, how do you fancy joining rock choir?
No.
Oh, don't be miserable. Do you know what it is?
I don't want to know.
It's a weekly group that meet and they sing contemporary songs.
I have therapy once a week. I don't have time.
But this could be like therapy. You love singing. You torture all our listeners with it and me. You could go and don't laugh, you do.
I only sing Beatles records and a-ha records.
Now, you've murdered ABBA, you've murdered Whitney Hughes, you've really murdered Whitney Houston. You've literally slashed her music. Mariah Carey, why not come to rock? What, we would enjoy it.
They won't accept me.
No, it doesn't matter whether you can sing or not.
Well, that's going to be like a cacophony of howling cats.
I thought it'd be fun, you know. You are miserable. No. You're miserable.
Well.
Miserable.
That brings me to the headline of my column.
Being miserable.
In which I long to feel joy again. I actually have a condition.
Come to rock choir.
And it's been proved by this woman who's written this book. And she's going to be very happy. There's an illustration of her book in the name.
It is. Do you know, this? I'm saying it again, another week, but this illustrator is pretty blinding again, isn't she? It's a good illustration.
So I've been reading a book, really, 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 really good book, called Feeling Blah, Why Anhedonia Has Left You Joyless and How to Recapture Life's Highs. It's by Tanith Carey. Anhedonia is Greek for an inability to feel happiness. You see, that's what I have. I have that, I have it, and now she's proved I have it.
But if you sort of put some music on and dance around.
No, bugger off.
Oh.
One sentence in this book really resonated with me, and she says, "I almost fall off my shit chair with shock when I hear myself laughing." I don't laugh anymore, do I?
No.
I used to.
Yeah, well, you mainly laughed at me. There was that time you chucked a bucket of water over me.
It's only because I slipped on the ice.
But you found it very, very funny. Very funny.
You don't have to be depressed to experience anhedonia, but it can be a symptom. Another is you can't easily recall a time when you really enjoyed yourself. Me, I cannot remember being happy. Even my last date with the rock star was littered with the ignominy of multiple beds in our hotel room. Who has more than one bed in a hotel? No!
It's a family room, isn't it? It's got to be a family
room.
Don't
give me a family room. My ovaries are as unused as Miley Crusoe. They're not used.
No, but the rest of you is, so no. At least you had a bed.
You no longer enjoy things that used to give you pleasure. A dog walk, sex, dinner somewhere fancy. Lockdown exacerbated this feeling for many of us. There was nothing to plan or dress up for. We need goals, treats to look forward to rather than yet another Groundhog Day. That's what I'd always do in my old life. I'd plan a date with David at the Royal Albert Hall to watch a live orchestra and a screening of The English Patient. I would have had my hair done, my nails polished. Dear God, for this newspaper's 40th birthday party, a lot of planning. Wasn't there a lot of planning?
There was more planning for that than people that get married.
Spreadsheets, pie charts.
Yeah. I couldn't keep up.
I rented a Bottega Veneta dress, matching clutch, earrings, and I hired a stylist.
We won't even go into the
She had to go and get my Bottega Veneta dress, and she'd only given birth the day before. She took the baby. I said, don't let him sick on it.
She was in Space NK.
Don't let him sick on it. She went to Space NK.
She did, I remember
She
that.
Got me primer in Space NK.
She did.
A day after she gave birth. So for that party, I hired a stylist. Gave birth the previous day, don't sick on my dress. When I hosted a reader's evening earlier this year in January, one woman's comment, she was sitting at the front, stuck. Liz, you need to stop having all these expensive treatments. You need to look after yourself, not care what other people think of how you look. She's missing a fundamental point. The rule I've always lived by is I dress up, look after myself out of respect for others. I wouldn't turn up as an in-law. That's why I hired Bottega and told the baby not to sick on it. It's because it was a respect for all the people who'd worked for the Mail on Sunday for 40 years.
But also it makes you feel you, doesn't it?
Well, you feel more confident, but it's also, it's about respecting others in that you've organised this party. I'm going to jolly well do my best when I turn up. I'm not just going to slope up with sick down my vest.
No, it's probably best.
At my mother's funeral, an in-law turned up in jeans and nose rings.
I don't like that.
My mum wouldn't have liked. It's not about you. It was about showing my mum
respect.
Respect.
Yeah. I don't like this thing about funerals now, people going casual to funerals.
No,
I don't like it at all. I want to go back to where we wore armbands and things.
When I die, I want all the collies brushed and groomed.
Right. I'll add it to my list of sorting out everything else. I'll put it on my list. I'll line them up.
So, for example, I was invited to the Oxford Union to do a debate. And you're in a room that Einstein has stood in, and you're like, oh my God, I'm breathing the same air as Einstein. And a famous newspaper columnist turned up, I wrote a piece about this, with a rucksack. You don't take a rucksack to the room where Einstein once breathed air. You don't do it. And a tracksuit. I'm writing a musical at the moment.
Very exciting, isn't
it? I've done a little post-it note at the end saying, don't worry, I'm not going to be singing.
Yeah, that is the relief.
It's set mostly in the 1960s. I've been watching footage of the time and everyone is so smart. They're all slim, they're wearing proper shoes and skirts and jackets and everything's been polished. The hair is set, they've got false eyelashes, lipstick, they carry proper handbags, wear stockings. My feeling is the external directly affects our mood and self-esteem. It's why I've loved fashion since I was 5 years old. It's a way of making myself more confident. My biggest worry about my first date with white Ferrari guy later this week is what on earth shall I wear?
This was a long discussion, wasn't it? Long discussion.
I'm thinking of wearing my 20-year-old lace Prada skirt. I've cut the lining out of it so that it's now sheer. So I'm very easily influenced by Florence Pugh. An oversized cashmere V-neck I borrowed from Marks & Spencer. Poor Nick had to post it back. I'm out of practice applying makeup too. I've decided to ditch the eyeliner and order sparkly eyeshadow from Victoria Beckham.
And sparkle.
She stopped fighting with her daughter-in-law enough to make me some makeup.
That's very good of her.
I wear my diamond stud earrings rather disloyally, given they are sort of from David. We're going to talk about them at the end with a nasty letter. But rather than sparking joy, I feel blah. I don't want to sit across from a man while he judges me as though I'm a spaniel at Crufts. The endless questions. Just Google me, numbnuts.
Bit intolerant.
His inevitable boasting. Me wheeling out colourful celebrity-strewn anecdotes to someone I have nothing in common with. Then I catastrophise. Will he follow my car home and murder me? Will he post something mean online? Will I? I'm now dressed, as ready as I'll ever be. I park my car behind a tree. I'm so ashamed. It's like Kristen Wiig's wreck in Bridesmaids. But worse. It's worse, isn't
it? Worse. It's worse. She didn't have Gracie eating it.
Do you remember that line from Bridesmaids when she moves back in with her mum? Remember when you thought I'd hit rock bottom? That wasn't rock bottom. I don't spot a Ferrari of any description. I make my way to reception and then, oh God, I get an email. That, Nicola, is what you call a cliffhanger in journalism town.
A payoff.
It's not really a payoff. There are payoffs.
It's a cliffhanger.
I remember once I was at the Standard and I always put quote to come, joke to come, anecdote to come, joke to come. Then I put payoff to come. They actually published payoff to come.
Fantastic. Fantastic. So from this book, did you actually get how to change that?
No, because I think it's an illness.
Yeah, but you can still approach it.
Even a nice occasion for me is fraught with worry, preparation, worry, 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 glad it's over, get home. Do you know the best thing about coming home from that date with Ferrari guy, and you'll hear all about it next week, is taking your shoes off, taking your eyelashes off.
You can't beat it, can you?
It's when you take it all off and you can relax and you think, thank God it's over.
No, you can't beat it.
Unless it was Morton Harkett.
Oh, for God's sake.
Every week, lots of you get in touch telling me what you think about my life and my decisions. So I think it's only fair that you get to have your say here on the podcast too. If you'd like to get in touch, then go to lizjonesgoddess.com or tweet me at lizjonesgoddess.
Now, you've got a letter this week, haven't you?
Yes.
You're in charge of the letters this week.
Well, it came on a piece of paper, which is very unusual, isn't it?
Yes, I don't deal with paper. I'm the electronic type.
And it's from someone called Mrs. J.Y. Sampson, who lives in Gravesend in Kent.
That's very formal.
Mrs. Sampson, the only reply you're getting is this one.
Dear, I haven't heard this, so I'm bated breath.
Dear Liz Jones, how could you be so mercenary and hurtful regarding your Tiffany pearls? Why could you not have accepted them as a lovely gift instead of looking at the value? Always you refer to how much items cost, and if they have a top-class brand name, then it seems that is why you have spent and lost so much over the years. It's not actually Mrs. Sampson, it's not. I'm actually quite frugal.
She's very frugal, actually.
I didn't buy a sweater for my date. I borrowed it from Marks & Spencer's and I sent it back. And it did have a few dog hairs, but I'm hoping they didn't notice.
Just sort of, yeah. And you've got holy joppers. Don't forget the holy joppers.
I do not think you will ever learn to be humble and thankful.
Oh dear.
But my feeling, Mrs. Sampson, is if someone spent a lot of money they don't have on a gift for me, I am sure they would rather I had something I liked and loved and would wear than something I didn't like and I just put it in a cupboard.
And to be fair, he did send the receipt with it, didn't he? So that's, to me, that if he wanted to change it,
he didn't really know. I think that was just an accident.
Well, oh, okay. But by some happy accident, you got the receipt as well. So we're going to take it that maybe he thought that you would prefer something different.
No, but I tell you, should I tell you what really annoys me? It's the endless, endless criticism I get. When actually all I try to do is the right thing and be nice and be generous. And I just get criticised. But you see, most people would have hidden away the fact they changed it. But I told you, because that's what most women do. That's the reality. And I'd rather have a gift that I wear and love, and I do love my earrings, than something I just put in a box and didn't wear, like something Nicola gave me, like wide leg neck trousers.
Oh, shut up about the trousers. You grateful cow.
I'd rather have something that I like.
No, I would definitely, and I think it's better to be honest and say, I'm really, I mean, I've done that, you know, when someone's bought me something and said, I'm really sorry, I wouldn't wear this. Thank you. I really appreciate it, but I wouldn't wear this. Do you mind if I change it? I've done that because it is a waste of money and people can't afford to waste money on something that you're not going to wear. No, I don't see the
problem.
But
I'm sick of being criticised.
I think whatever we do, though, someone is going to criticise. We just can't make everybody agree with us, can we? Someone's going to always criticise.
But I'm not going to wear a pearl necklace, but I wear my diamond earrings every single day. Yeah. And they're more me.
But you wear them, you appreciate them, you're thankful for them, you're grateful for them.
Yeah.
And all's well with the world.
And it's not just about money, Mrs. whatever your name is. If he'd come and painted my window frames or brought loads of dog food or weeded the gravel or something, it's just tiny little things would have made me happy that someone would do for me.
Oh, I'd be so grateful if someone just mowed my grass. I would, I'd be happy. I'd rather that than a pair of diamond earrings. Just mow my bloody grass.
Well, that's it from us this week. If you enjoyed listening to Liz Jones's Diary, the podcast, why not visit mailplus.co.uk/subscribe to get access to all our podcasts, videos, opinion pieces and more. I'll be back next Sunday, but for now, I'm Liz Jones.
And I'm Nick.
Goodbye.